Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Yo! Welcome into the House of L podcast. I'm the L of the House of L podcast. I'm Lawrence Holmes. Man, you talk about an episode that is powerful. This episode right here is the one. It's the one. There is a lot to learn from our guest this week. And I'm so excited that he even agreed to do this and be on the podcast. And as you'll see, be extremely reflective and vulnerable inside our conversation. And also answer some questions that a lot of people have about Mike Brown and when they're going to see him again. I'll get to that momentarily. Let me tell you that this podcast is possible because of the fine folks at Mazda of Orland Park, ZoomZoomNation.com. If you want a unique buying experience, you should definitely go check them out. Go get yourself a CX-5. Go find yourself a sports car over there at Mazda. Do that. And tell them that you heard about them on the House of L podcast. We are also brought to you by 56David.com. David Hochberg, a good man if you're trying to buy a home or refinance a home and you're looking for someone to help you out to explain some of the financing issues, this is the guy that can do it. 855-56-DAVID is the number that you should call. And when you call him, you should be like, hey, Lauren said you're a good dude, said that you can help me out with my home. Help me out. Make a miracle, David. He does stuff like that. Homeside Financial is an equal housing lender. NMLS number 1124061. If you're new to the podcast, I should give you a little bit of history about me. I would say that my career started to blossom once I started to cover the Bears. I've always joked that covering the Bears is the city hall of sports. A lot of eyes are on you because a ton of eyes are on them. And being able to cover a team that's that popular that closely, it means that more people are going to pay attention to what it is that you do. So I started covering the Bears in 2003. And it was great. Right at the end of Dick Geron's era is when I started to cover the team. And I got the opportunity to see them bring in Lovey and watch that kind of ascent to them playing in the Super Bowl in the 2006 season, in February of 2007, but in the 2006 season. Which means I got to see the zenith of a lot of careers of some of the favorite Bears. And I've been lucky enough to work with a bunch of them too. I got to see Lance's whole career. I got to see almost all of Alex's career, except for, you know, the time he went to New Orleans. And then there was the Beast Quake. I'm just playing 9-6. I got to see most of Olin's career as a Bear. Pretty much all of Urlacher. Like all of the greats. Charles Tillman, who we talk about in this episode. And Mike Brown. And Mike Brown is one of those players that I think Bears fans gravitate towards. He's kind of got all the stuff that Bears fans like. He's tough, he's smart, selfless, and he's a great player and a great teammate. And the only thing that stood in his way was these injuries. Like, he kept getting injured. And to go on to have, what, a 10-year career in the league is amazing. But it always felt like he could have done more. And, like, the Super Bowl itself, and I don't mean effort-wise. Like, obviously, like, he gave tremendous effort trying to rehab and come back all the time. But I think that Bears fans recognize his greatness and wish they could have seen more of his greatness. And then the worst part is seeing that Bears team be so good in 2006 and him be a part of it, see them get to the Super Bowl and the injustice of him not playing in it. I mean, I talked to Mike about this inside the episode. It used to be on media day. It's still this way. Like, you can talk to anyone who is in the organization. But what would happen was, is that everyone would be out there on the field and you go talk to whoever you wanted to talk to. And with the Super Bowl this past season, because I was at this last year's Super Bowl, it's more television show. And I get that. Like, it's their property and it's totally fine. But there aren't as many opportunities to do, like, in-depth stuff. Now, it was cool for me because Dave Tobe is the special teams coordinator for Kansas City. So I spent, like, 20 minutes talking with Dave Tobe. I talked with some other people that had Chicago ties, too. But when I was covering the team, you're trying to do the stories that you haven't done. So everyone is made available in the organization. Like, we could talk to people that we never got to talk to, trainers and, you know, upper management, like that sort of thing. And I was looking for Mike Brown. Like, I was looking for Mike Brown and Tommy Harris. And it hurt. Like, you're not really supposed to be emotionally attached to stories. And when it comes to whether a team wins or loses, like, that part doesn't faze me as much anymore. But when it comes to the personal stories, and I had at that point spent 4 years getting to know Mike and knowing his story and knowing what he had gone through, it hurt me to see him out there knowing that he wasn't going to play in the Super Bowl. So we spent some time talking about that. I think he's a lot of Bears fans' favorite Bear. And so it was cool to sit down with him. He hit me up and I said, hey man, we were just talking about baseball. I think we were talking about Mookie Betts. And I was like, we need to do the interview, Mike. We need to do the interview. And he was down for it. So I think that you're going to enjoy this. A lot of the questions that you've had about Mike Brown, like, is he ever going to coach? Because everyone thinks that he'd be a great coach. He makes a very great argument on why it would be difficult for him to coach. What was it like to not play in that Super Bowl? There's a very emotional conversation that happens there. Why was he so good at scoring as a defensive player? I got the secret to that too. And why he loved the Bears in Chicago. And why, even after being healthy in the 2009 season with Kansas City, he walked away. All of that is explained. And he makes an impassioned plea for one of his teammates to be in the Hall of Fame. That's a tease inside the beginning of a podcast, huh? This was a lot of fun. A great interview. Number 30, Mike B.
Florence, man. I was telling you know, my family, we saw you last time we saw you was in we saw a baseball game.
Yes.
And so, yeah, so like they were like, who are you talking to? I was like, man, Lawrence. Y'all know Lawrence? And they were like, man, who is Lawrence? I'm like, you know, the little short dude. I'm like, wait a minute, he might be taller than me.
No, I think you're a little bit taller, but yes, I'm the non-football player that was in the box with you guys. That night was actually a lot of fun, man.
That was a great time, yeah. Like, so that's the last time that we spoke like face to face. So, yeah.
Man, that's good. Well, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Lawrence. Like, life is good for me. You know, I call it like, you know, I've had a lot of seasoning, you know what I'm saying? I've been through a lot of things and like just growing up, you know, I'm 42 now. So just learning life and learning mistakes, how to get over those things and how to be a better person. So that's where I'm at right now.
And I remember you saying like, look, I'm out here playing super dad right now. Like that's the position that I'm playing.
Yeah, for sure.
So what's it like to be super dad?
Well, let me tell you, my daughter, she's just started her first day of her sophomore year in high school.
Wow.
Right. But it's all online. So like, I'm just like, yo, I'm hyped because I know when I was a sophomore, like I told her, I was like, when I was a sophomore, that's when my life changed. That was like when my mind knew what I wanted to do. And then I was willing to put in the effort to go get it. You know what I'm saying? So everything I needed to do, like, and now that happened my sophomore year. So I was just reminiscing. I'm like, dang, I got a daughter that's, man, she's a sophomore. And then I was like, man, when I was a sophomore, I was like, man, that's when my mind and my body and everything I wanted, that's when I knew it. So, I mean, she has taught me a lot, which is special. You know what I'm saying? Like when you can learn from a child, that's pretty cool. So she started her sophomore year. And we're going to see what's going to happen because it's crazy out here. But I have a lot of faith in her because she's strong-willed. She's self-motivated. And we send all we can to her. You know, we give her support, try to help her out, let her be her. So that's how we roll.
What do you think is the biggest lesson that your daughter has taught you?
Oh, the biggest lesson that's taught me is like, that's a great question. That is a great question. You know what she's taught me? She's taught me not to be selfish. Not like an internal selfishness. You know what I'm saying? Like, what are you really doing this for? So she taught me that.
How did it manifest itself? Like, how did you come to the realization? You're like, man, I need to understand that I need to look outward and I need to be looking at everyone else that's in this family.
Man, Lawrence, I can't tell you when that happened. I can't tell you. I know it's just been a journey. You know what I'm saying? But see, my parents always taught me, man, hey, man, you better be, you just keep climbing, bruh. Just keep climbing. So whatever comes to me, like that's how I was raised. And when it comes to me, I'm gonna try to do the best I can, right? But that, man, do the best you can. And if you do that, you can live with the results. Now the results might be sucky and crazy, but you can be all right. But see, like somehow, like, and I believe like when you become a pro athlete, it becomes very, you know, we talk about team and all that, but it's definitely becomes more a personal thing because it's business involved. So that's why you see like the pro part of it. That's why I like the bubble, because it's just ball. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're going to see who really wants to play ball and who doesn't want to play ball. You hear that, you like live mics, like you see the competitiveness, you see dudes, you're like, man, the dude play ball. You know what I'm saying? But the pro part of it, like traveling, dealing with the media, doing all that kind of stuff, that takes, you have to be very strong mentally and all that. And that's taxing. And some people don't get taught that. You know what I'm saying? Some people just get thrown into it. Some people don't care about it, you know? So I guess that's the one thing that I know that has changed about me is just that piece of being like, that personal selfishness, it's left me. And I would say it started when I had my daughter, And then that's when things started changing for me. Like the decisions I was making and like things I would do, you know, I'm going on and on, Lawrence. So
that's the beauty of a podcast though. Like you can talk, like we don't have to worry about any commercials. You can talk as long as you want. You can say whatever you want. I mean, you should go back and listen to the Spice Adams one. Like,
oh yeah, that's my dude. I mean, Spice is my man, bro. Like that dude right there, he's a special person. Like that guy right there is a special dude. I love that man.
Me too.
Like beyond, like, yeah, he's one of my favorites. Oh, I got a dog. Hey, chill out. Sit down. I'm sorry.
It's all good. Like I gotta say,
I don't even like dogs. It's for the children. Oh.
See, look, Mama see, came, there's hey, you being
Mama
selfless.
Came, Mama came and got her. Anyways, what's up, Lawrence?
So let's talk a little bit about Spice for a second. I had this conversation with Spice, and it was so great, Mike. He was talking to me about knowing that it was over for him, and he was talking about like all the things that he went through. Where he's like, oh yeah, these coaches tell you all the time, but they got a spot for you, or this guy, they got a spot for you. And he said that sitting there through that whole season, it took him probably until November or December to be like, oh, I guess I'm done playing football. Like that's a hard reality. I think it's one of the most interesting things about what you guys do, because you're superstars for forever. From the time that I'm guessing you were probably 15 years old, you're a superstar. And then you're in your 30s and you're like, oh, well, what am I supposed to do now? So for you, what was that journey like of figuring out what am I supposed to do now?
Well, I remember the writing was on the wall with me, with my career with the Bears, man. You keep getting hurt, bro. Like, you can't keep paying you. Like, that was understood. So we left on good terms. Me and the Bears, like, that's my squad. Like, we left on good terms. So I had 1 year with Kansas City. And it was one of those years where, like, I was, like, one of the oldest dudes in the locker room. That was my first time ever being like that. And so it was like, and we had a team that was full of young dudes, man. I'm like 23, 24, right? So, and like, I mean, the coach, it was Haley brought me in, you know, Coach Haley. And he's like, man, we're going to teach these dudes how to be pros. And that was it was tough for me. It was really tough because, you know, I had something to prove because, you know, I kept getting hurt. And I was like, man, I'm still a good football player. But at the same time, it's like, man, these young dudes are coming up. So, like, I was in a difficult position. And so, and plus, you know, moving and all that and, like, doing that. So, like, for the first half of that season, man, I was mentally frayed. So I wasn't playing well. But then the last half, I started getting back to my rhythm. Like, okay, back to ball and playing, you know what I'm saying? And then after that season, it was like, man, you know, that's my 10th season playing ball. That's all I do is play ball. And then, you know, you're like, man, nothing, you know, like Spice was saying, crickets, right? Still working out though. I mean, I'm working out. I'm doing like all the things I need to do to be ready. And one day I was running. It was like, I was doing 100-yard ladders and I'm running. And literally like, I was like halfway through my workout and I was like, I'm done. I don't have the want to do this anymore. And that hurt. So that's what it was for me.
When, so you're going through this process and are you thinking like once you take the break, like in the middle of this ladder and you're like, is this my mind messing with me? Or am I actually done? Does that conversation even take place?
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, as an athlete, you know, like pain, you can't do it. That stuff, you like, man, I can do it. Like dudes play, like, you don't understand, like football players, the amount of stuff they play, like broken bones. And like, it's stupid. Like, to be able to do that. And like, so if you you've been able to do all that, and then you say, like, dude, it's not even worth it anymore. And I remember telling myself I wouldn't do it if it just for the money. Now, I had opportunities. Like, I had teams call me, but I was like, I'm done, bro. I'm done.
Man, that's a hard and mature decision to make when there's literally millions of dollars, like, sitting in front of you.
Exactly. I mean, it's, and, like, you know, minimum. And, you know, back in the, yeah, minimum. That's they're off of minimum, and it was a million. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, what? Yeah, so you like, wait a minute. I got, you know, I still got family. Like, man, like, with this money, like, you know, as a person who lives life, like, money helps you do things, right? Doesn't make you happier or whatever. Like, we all, but it helps you get through things. I'm like, man, that's the struggle I had. I'm like, I'm making a dumb decision. Like, just this doesn't make sense in my mind. Like, the way my mind thinks. But for me personally, it was the best decision I could make.
Why do you love ball? Because I've been around a lot of players, Mike, and I know that everyone loves the game, but you seem to have this real affection for the game that I find to be rare in professional players. Where does that come from?
Dude, it's the game, man. Like, you know, with Herm said, you play to win the game.
That's
so
right.
That's the whole thing. You play to win the game. So no matter who's the best, who's the fastest, who's the strongest, we playing this game. You know what I'm saying? And I can give you work too. You know what I'm saying? Even if you're better, faster, stronger, but I can give you work too. And maybe if I just keep working harder than you, I'll give you more work than you give me. So that's the thing I loved about it, because athletic wise, shoot, I can't sniff these dudes. I can't sniff them. But my heart and, like, the way I, like, every play, my effort, I can match that. I can do that. So those are the things that I like, is because you see dudes, like, big dudes jump and run and fast. That's the one thing I love about sports. It's like the little dude who keeps doing the thing the right way, or the slowest dude keeps doing the right way, he can win too. So that's why I love sports and competition.
A lot of people talk about your ability to play the game mentally as one of your strengths as a player. When did that light turn on about working towards being the smartest player on the field?
Oh, man. You know what? That's something like That's a very interesting question. So that takes me a little bit of thought to think about, like, when the mental part. I would say the mental part happened in college. Like, we used to do a lot of like, our coaches at Nebraska, man, we had, like, coaches that had been there for 25 years, so they had a lot of pedigree. I mean, they talked to all, you know, the NFL coaches. So we ran a lot of, like, NFL concepts in our defense. And so at that time when I came in, like, I was like, man, you know, trying to figure it out. But then, you know, me, I'm starting to get like, man, you need to be over here. You need to be over here. You need to be like, so it was just natural for me to just get people in the right spot. But I didn't even know what I was doing. You know what I'm saying? I'm just like, man, you need to be over here. But then when I got to the NFL, Coach Vance Bedford, and then when I got with him, and, like, something about him, like, the game, just, like, the way he was speaking about the game and the things I saw with him speaking about it, it was like a, I don't know, like, it's like things become pictures in my mind. So when he's speaking, I can see it in my mind. It's just a picture, like, whatever it is. So I think it's just a naturalness. I think God made me to be a competitor, to be someone that has like, you know, my dad, like, Brown, my dad's side of the family, all, you know, super, super strong, super, super hard workers, and, like, just do what they got to do. So they just warrior mentality. So I think that's where I got it from. But definitely Nebraska, didn't know. But then when I got to Coach Bedford, then I knew.
So you were doing it at Nebraska, but you didn't know what you were doing.
And I didn't know what I was doing. Like, so this is so... The story, so we had so Greg Blosch, you know, Greg Blosch, like, the story is, like, man, he comes in, right? And, like, so this is, you know, before the draft, he's like, hey, man, and he puts me on the board, right? You know, they have this story like, man, he's one of the smartest dudes. I'm like, hey, man, all I know, he's like, hey, when you run this coverage or when you run this defense, I'm like, hey, man, that's all I know. This dude's supposed to be here. This guy's supposed to be here. And so, like, I'm just like, this is where the people are supposed to be. Like, I don't know why they're supposed to be there, but this is where they're supposed to be. And so he's like, man, like, so that was the thing. I was like, man, he's super smart. But no, it's just like, I just knew where people were supposed to be.
So what do you think it was about Bedford that allowed you to visualize what was happening on the field better? Like, it seems as if he was better at articulating it.
To be honest, which is because he was black. Like, I hate to say it, he was black, man. You know what I'm saying? So the way he could articulate the things was different, right? He has a different understanding. He has
there was a level of comfort.
Comfort with, and Coach Bedford, man, he's a great coach now. Like, Coach Bedford, you look at his pet, like Coach Bedford is a great coach. You know what I'm saying? But just for me, like, so I almost always say that. It's for me. It's not for everybody. But for me, that's what I think it was. That was the, man, let me think about it. That was the first, really black coach that I had that was, like, in my face. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had a daily conversation with.
Wow. Like, think about that. Like, this is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah. It's not that long ago that you ended up having a coach like that, like you having a black coach that had an impact.
You know what, Lawrence, let me take it back. You know what? I'm gonna slow down. Actually, when I was in high school,
okay.
Let me check that. I'm gonna check myself because I had to reach back. Let me check that. When I was in high school, we had an assistant coach. He was a receiver coach, and he used to play in the league. Man, what was his name?
This in Scottsdale?
Yes. Back in the day. 95, somewhere around there, 94, 95. What was his man's name? He played with the Broncos. But somehow he ended up being assistant coach for a hot minute with us. Like, for real. Like, his name was Coach Harris. And, like, he gave me, on-field stuff. Like, we're playing games that, hey, man, next time this happens, do this. And, like, that, like, he was like, hey, man, next time, like, I was a running back. So he was like, one time he was like, hey, man, don't get too close to the sideline, right? So when you have this dude has the angle on you, you run at him and just get you a little bit more room on that sideline. And then when they push you, right, they ain't strong enough to push you out of bounds, right? You still have that room. And then I guarantee you the next play, get the pitch. I hit the sideline, right? Dude got the angle on me. I'm like, hey, the dude. So I got off the sideline a little bit. Dude pushed me. And I tightrope the sideline, touchdown. And I was like, damn. It works. It works. So I'll take that back. His name was Coach Harris. I had to dig deep for that one. I'm talking about, you know, daily face-to-face contact and talking to.
I was told that part of the reason that you were so effective defensively when you guys
were telling me what the people talking about,
the people would say that because of your time as a high school running back, that when you got the ball, you understood how to make the offensive linemen on the other team have to go side to side. And you were always going to win that race with the guys on defense.
Yeah, but see, it took me a while because, like, when I was in high, like, I didn't get a lot of picks, but, like, somehow when I, but, like, yeah, you could just see it. Like, big people, see, like, offensive linemen can't tackle. They don't do that. So what you got to do as a defense, and this is Lovey's system, though. This is Lovey. So it's like once you get the ball, basically – What Lovey taught us was this, like any ball that's on the ground, you pick it up, I don't care, and we start running towards the end zone, right? And then you set up a wall, the nearest number, whatever number is the nearest. So this is taught to us now, the nearest number. So you set up a wall on the number, right? So now we're just running. And who, like, in the people who usually make the tackles are like the fast people. It's gonna be the
receivers.
The receiver.
Yeah.
Right. So the person that the ball is thrown to, block him first, demolish him, and then like look back. But we're setting up a wall, but we're looking backwards, right? And so when you get the ball, I'm like, okay. Right? But you know, offensive linemen are spread out everywhere. So what you gotta do is just start a direction like offensive, like elephants, right? Just shoot them. Hey, I'm going this way. And they start running that way. And it takes like two steps, one, two, and they go that way. And you just come back and they just have a hard time like turning their bodies around.
And then you have, by then, the wall is set up.
Yeah, you got the blocks. You like everyone is set up. So like it's like colors. Remember, you can run down or you can walk down, whatever one you want to do.
Do you have a favorite return?
Oh, favorite return?
I mean, obviously, man. Like the person who's listening to this is going to say San Francisco or Cleveland.
Favorite return? Come on, dude. Like, that's my career, man. That's like, you can't, those two are amazing. Like, it's to this day, I still can't believe how it happened. Why it happened, you know what I'm saying? It's very strange, and it happened to me, you know what I'm saying? And so, like, people talk about it all the time. So, I don't know. But, hey, I'm glad it happened to me, and, like, I'm glad I was a part of all that, because that year was special, 2001, man. Like, I was a youngster, and we had a squad, and we had a lot of older veteran dudes, like old school dudes that taught me a lot about life. Dick Geron, you know what I'm saying? Dick Geron is one of my favorite coaches. He's a great man. He's a genuine man. So I was a very lucky person to be around a whole bunch of people who were invested in not only like the betterment of, you know, whatever they were doing, but also invested in me personally. So if you're around that, like, I'm about that village. Like, it takes a village. So the more, the merrier for me.
What do you think makes a great coach?
Well, I guess it depends on what level you're talking about. I think if you're starting off, like, super young, like, you know, I've been around, you know, my kids. I've coached them. You know, now they don't really like to hear me. So, like, I just umpire, you know, do that thing. But I would say youngsters, the first thing you want to do is teach them how to play. Like, catch the ball, throw it, and this is how you play, right? So fundamentals, like, I think when you're young, it's fundamentals. And then as that builds, you'll find out who's competitive and who's not. And as you keep moving on, those people that are very competitive and, like, you, like, okay, you can add on to. But I'll say, so you get up to high school, right? Same thing, but now it's more competitive. So now we're trying to win these games. Like, we really need to win these games. So now I'm going to be a little bit tougher on you. You already know the fundamentals. You messed up over here. You know what I'm saying? Bam, bam, bam. Now, pros, I think it's different. I think sometimes you get professional athletes that come in that aren't pros, right? So that's why you have to have a whole staff, right? So I think, to me, as a professional head coach, manager, whatever, it's more about managing people than managing the game, right? You always going to have the – if I was a manager or a professional coach, I would be like, hey, I'm going to have a staff that I have. Man, y'all do that. And then I'm going to be the one that, nah, I don't like that. I don't like this. Oh, that's good. But when it comes to the people, you know, like, hey, man, what's going on with you? You got to manage these folks, man. You got to manage these folks. Life is happening, man. Kids are coming. You know what I'm saying? Hey, wife left me. You know what I'm saying? There's, like, real stuff. Like, all kind of crazy stuff. You know what I'm saying? Dude got arrested. You know what I'm saying? We don't know what's going on. So I think that is the thing that I would, if I would ever be able to be a professional head coach, is I wouldn't care about, like, X's and O's. I'd be like, man, what's up? Like, I need this dude. Like, he can play, but I need to make sure he's mentally ready to do it.
Do you think about coaching?
You know what? You know, I do, but I like it young, man. So like for real, like, you know, I used to coach like my kids, but they just, it's hard, you know what I'm saying? And then you got the parents to deal with too. So what I find is like, well, I do umpire baseball. So I'm able to do coaching and control the pace of the game. You know what I'm saying? Hey, strike zone, you know, like when the coaches come up, I'm like, hey, coach, my strike zone's going to be big. Now, if someone can throw strikes, man, we might try to, you know, tighten it up. If they can't, we swinging bats, you know what I'm saying? We ain't going to be over here for like 3 hours, you know what I'm saying? So once they understand that, and then just the game starts moving, the ball is thrown over the plate, kids are swinging, everyone's having fun, parents are laughing, smiling, you know what I'm saying? So that is, I think that's where I first caught the joy, was like Little League baseball when I was a youngster. It's like, man, everyone's laughing, having a good time. But I also remember like parents going crazy and like super intense. And so being able to see it firsthand, right? Because, you know, I was always like, players play, coaches coach, cheerleaders cheer. But now being on the other end of it, you see it from a different perspective.
Well, the reason that I ask is that it's the number one question that people ask me about you.
Please, what is it?
Is Mike Brown gonna coach? Because here's how it always goes. Hey, Lawrence, when's the last time you talked with Mike Brown? Oh, you know, every now and again, we hit each other up on DMs or whatever. Like, is he going to coach?
Because
he would be a great coach. That's what people think.
Lawrence, Chico, when the Panthers went to the Super Bowl, I was there in the summer. I was an intern. I was there. Coach Wilkes, Steve Wilkes was there. You know what I'm saying? I was in there. Dude, they have meetings to talk about the meeting they going to have. And then another meeting to talk about the other meeting. I'm like, this is stupid. I'm in the meetings. Like, man, this is ridiculous. Like, what? Like, this? Can we go to sleep? Can we, like, talk to the players? Like, you know what I'm saying? How are we going to have a meeting talking about the meeting we getting ready to have? Like, that's dumb to me. So, like, I can't do that.
And then meeting afterwards to talk about what happened in the meeting.
Can't do it. I get mad,
bro. Well, Mike, I always wonder about these coaches, and I see them and they're like, oh, you know, I've been sleeping at the facility, and I get to the facility at 3:45, and I'm like, why do you do
for
that?
What?
Like, why? It doesn't make any sense.
Good job. Turn the coffee on, bro. If you're there that early, can you hit the coffee for the rest of us? You know what I'm saying? What you doing?
But I think the Bears fans in particular, like, they have so much, like, they love you so much that, and they see the smarts and they're like, damn, Mike Brown would make a hell of a coach. So they're always one. But you're right. Like, you're right. Like, a coach's life is not fun at all.
Not all. Not the NFL coaches that I know. Not even the college coaches, man. Like I have, like, especially when I go back to Nebraska. Ugh. When I go back there, man, I talk to, you know, I mean, this old school. So they're old school. So relationships, you have, like, I mean, I know the coach's wives, you know what I'm saying? And I talk to their wives, man, and they love their husbands, but all of them be like, they were never home, bro. Like, damn.
Yep.
Never home. So That's not the life not right now. Maybe once my, like, Gilbert was like a mentor of mine also. So once his kids got a little bit older, you know, he knew they were straight, then he got into the game. So maybe once my kids get a little, you know, once I know that they're going to be all right, maybe.
Was it always football, or was, because you were a really good baseball player too in high school?
Yeah, baseball is just, I like baseball. Like, I love baseball. Like, it's just something that, like, I enjoy. Like, I respect it. But it's just a game of failure. And that, me in my mind, I'm telling you, with failure, I struggle with that. So even if you hit 300, I'm like, what about the other seven, bro? You know what I'm saying? I can't, like, that game. And then also, I didn't have an arm, so I couldn't throw.
So you could run down everything, but then you couldn't throw it.
But then I'm like, hey, cutoff man, you got to cut it off. You got to come cut it off, bro.
Well, I always wondered, like, were you drafted?
Well, there's many stories. I was, but this was like, it was like the 63rd round, but the A's called me and they were going to draft me in the second round. They were like, but are you going to play football? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to play football.
Dude.
And so that was it.
You could have had that Mookie Betts money.
Oh, I know, but my heart wasn't in it. But my heart wasn't in it.
Your heart was in playing defense and coming downhill and hitting people. So let me ask you about that. What type of person does it take to play the safety position the right way?
Oh, that's Lawrence. There's so many different types of safeties, man. It depends on what system you're in. I would say, like this is going to be, I would say I was always in the wrong position. Like I would say my skill set and what I could do, I was always not in that position. Like they call me a free safety. That's what I play. But what I do is strong safety stuff. But the thing is, so this is what the thing is. Like what Lawrence, I get people lined up, bro.
Right.
I get them lined up. So that is a skill. If you're able to do it quickly, that is a skill. You can get people in the right position. So, yeah. So that's what I would say about all that.
I always felt like you were a guy who played with a strong safety mentality no matter what, though. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like
the FS like, next to your name didn't matter to me.
Like, I'm coming, like, that's, I'm hitting. Like, whoever has the ball, I'm going to go get them. I'm going to hit them hard. And I hope I have a whole bunch of people with me coming to hit them. And we're going to try to get the ball out. And, like, yeah, I guess that's what it is. Like, I like safeties that are not afraid of contact. Like, I want that safety to come. And, like, yeah, I'm here. And, like, you might have thought you got through all this, but I'm here and you're going to taste this too. you got through the madness, but not quite yet. What I'm saying?
On the great Bears defenses that you played on, how important was communication?
Oh, communication is the key to life. Lawrence, communication is the key to life. It's the key to life. If you can't communicate with somebody or if they don't understand you, what are we going to be? Just stuck.
Lost.
Lost.
He's going to be lost.
That's it.
But it seemed like all three levels of your defense, it seemed like everyone kind of understood. And the way that you guys would communicate with each other, I always marveled at that because it seemed like everyone knew what they were supposed to do, where they were supposed to be, and were okay if they weren't where they were supposed to be with someone being like, hey, you need to be here and working off of that. How long does it take to develop something like that?
Dude, you just got to have the right people. So, like, that's out of my pay grade. I didn't pick the players. You know what I'm saying? You just play with the people that are there. So I would say that we had a lot of good players, Lawrence. A lot of good.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Players. We had Hall of Fame players, had a lot of smart players. Who chose those players? So that's what I would go to. You got to see who chose them. You know what I'm saying? So we can always go there, but it's always going to be the players. It's always going to be the players and how they react with each other. So the game, that's why I love sports, because it doesn't matter what anyone says. You know what I'm saying? Well, whoever's out there, that's what matters. And to me, that's why I love sports, love competition, because to me, it's the truest thing, unless someone's laying down. But in football, it's too physical to just lay down.
Can we go back to 2005 for a second?
Sure, let's go.
Alex and I have this conversation a lot.
Oh, Alex.
We have this because he loved that season. Like, he loved how good you guys' defense was. He loved what you guys did. And I remember you guys started out 1-3. And that's when we got the talk. That's when we got 30 coming into the locker room.
I didn't really say nothing, but it was just the truth, right? It was the truth.
It was the truth. People took it wrong. People took it
wrong.
Like, they didn't listen to what you had actually said.
Please saying. Exactly.
What you actually had said, it's like we suck. It's not that we suck.
We suck.
It's that it's like we suck. Like so take me back to the feeling of you understanding that you guys might have something that season and how disappointing it was when you started the way you did. And then what it felt like when you started rattling off win after win after win.
Word. I love that. So first of all, like we all knew, like we had this, we were good. We're like, man, we're good. And that's what it was. It was like, man, hit like, and that was that Cleveland game for sure. We were killing them, Lawrence. And then like in the last 2 minutes, they scored like 2 touchdowns, beat us. We always found a way to lose, right? So that's all I was saying. It's like, I don't know what it is, but we always find a way to lose. And like, so we got to figure this out. So, and then we started winning, right? And winning, boom, started. And then some confidence, right? Oh, we are good. Yes, we are. So that's all it took. You just have confidence in what we got. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times, like, you can feel it, like, even when we're playing and Bears, when we're at home, when it's a close game, you can feel the energy in the stadium, like, oh, shit. We can tell it. You can feel the energy. So that's why I'm the dude, like, hey, man, come on, we need you to, like, give us better. We need that energy. Because energy, you know, we feed off of that. So that's what happened. We just started feeding off that energy. And we knew we were good. So that's all it is. Once you know you're good, let be good. Don't be like, oh, waiting for something bad to happen. Let's go. So that's all it was, Lawrence. It's that simple.
Do you feel like, could you feel everyone buy in? Like, in that week that happens between the Cleveland game and the Vikings game, is there an actual buy-in that happens, or was it not until you guys, you know, you beat the Vikings, you beat Baltimore, that
you gotta get a win. So you gotta get a win.
Getting that one win helps to like validate being said.
Put a stamp on it. That's right. And then what we gonna do now? And then that's we gonna be pump it up, baby. Let's go. Keep running. You know what I'm saying? WWE, whatever. The Rock is here, whatever. People's champ, all that. Whatever. Let's go. It's that simple. Let's go.
So what's the feeling that you had personally going into the 2006 season?
Oh, man. Well, I got we knew we were good. Like we had those aspirations, right? And then when we started playing, you know what I'm saying? Rex Grossman was like MVP caliber, you know what I'm saying? We was like, okay. You know what I'm saying?
He was an offensive player of the month in September of 2006.
MVP caliber. They want to know about it. Nobody playing better than Rex Grossman. When I mean, the first like five games we was playing, man, nobody was playing better than that dude. The dude was slinging that thing. And the defense was running through everybody. You know what I'm saying? We was like the Rock. Dude, champion. You know what I'm saying? We had that swag. And then I love that season. That's a tough season for me, Lawrence. But yeah, and then I wish I could have rolled with them homeboys for the rest of it, but it is what it is.
The Arizona game. I mean, that to me is the quintessential like Mike Brown moment. Like that to me is
that's it.
It's like your entire career, like in one
it
game.
It is. In a snapshot, real quick, like, yes, sir. Like and that's my home. That's my home. That's where I went to high school, fifth grade through. That's when my people was there. Had all my homies there. I had, you know, we was deep in Arizona. You know what I'm saying? Deep. I got a funny story about that. Check this out.
Okay.
So I get, you'll like this story. So, you know, I get hurt. You know what I'm saying? Arizona, they have stuff together. Like x-ray, like everything right there. Like we get off the field, they have everything set up. Bam, bam, bam. So we know the deal. And like in Arizona, like the bowels of the stadium are like, it takes a long time to get to the locker room. So I'm driving there. I get into the locker room. I shower up. Right? I shower up. I come out the shower, Lawrence. Right? Just me, right? And you know who's in the locker room? My wife.
Oh, wow.
You know what she says? You know what she says, Lawrence?
Get back out there. You got to see this?
Lawrence. I come out the shower. She's in the locker room. You know what she says? You're naked. The locker room. And what are you doing here? She starts taking photos. I said, if you don't get your ass out of here, you know what I'm saying? Get her up out of there. And then it's me and, it's Scott.
Scott Hagel.
Media guy. Yeah, Hagel. And we're watching the TV. Man, they point. I said, me and Scott sitting there, I said, Scott, don't kick it to this man, bro. If you kick it to him, like, that's dangerous, right? They kick it to him. I said, they kicked it to him, and he took it back. We were going nuts in the locker room, bro. It was awesome. Like, I that's one of the best memories I have, man, for real.
How hard is that? Like, you understand, like, where you're at physically, but your boys are out there fighting their asses off. Without any help from the offense, Rex turned the ball over six times that game.
How many times you want to give it? You want to give it again?
Six times, man, four interceptions and two fumbles.
Hey, we would come to the sideline, bro. We over there like, hey man, get some Gatorade. Like, oh, back on the field. Like, what? You need it, man? Put your helmet back on.
So that emotion that's going through you as you see what Urlach had with 25 tackles in that game.
Man, was it, bro, him, like, he was amazing. Like, he was a maniac that game, wasn't he? He was a maniac.
Well, you were too, and so was Charles. Like, the entire
defense, like, everybody. Like, our defense, that was the squad right there, bro. That was the squad.
I can't even imagine, like, how gratifying that must have been for you guys to be like, you know what? We'll just win the game. Like, we'll just do it. Since the offense doesn't want to help, we'll just win the game.
I mean, that was our mentality, bro. Like, I can't lie. That was our mentality. Hey, and trust me, I tell Olin that too. Like, I just talked to Olin. I said, you know, training camp is starting up. You know what I'm saying? Just to get into the mood, we used to demolish y'all in a 2-minute drill. You know what I'm saying? Kill y'all, like three plays and out. But if coach wants y'all to get more work, we're willing to give you the opportunity.
Wow. I don't even know if you remember this, but I remember this. This is one of my favorite covering Mike Brown stories, is that one day during training camp, you guys are 11-on-11, and the offense, if they make a play, Everyone cheers. If you guys make a play, it's like, oh, and you looked over at me and you go, hey, we're Bears too. Like we're also on the Bears. It's okay for us to actually do something good.
Hey, we can play too, man. We get paid also.
it's so great. All right, so yeah. let me stay with 2006 and like after that Arizona game. What was that locker room like when everyone came in after you guys won?
Man, that's a great, you know what? It was probably a little bit different from my perspective, but that was definitely that I don't know how to explain it. That is like a we know moment, like, oh, this is legit. Right? Like, oh, this is for real, right? This isn't like we are, because you don't come back like that's those type of things in football, like those type of games, those are like what we call the gods of football are looking out. So once the gods of football are looking out for you, you're like, man, we can do this. And once again, that's that winning and just like overcoming, just like anything you do. If you can just keep going through it, man, you never know what happens on the other end.
Did you stay away from the team the rest of the season?
I did, man. I struggled, bro. I really did. I was there for a while, but then, you know, I had young children. That's when, like, I think my mind started betraying me a little bit. I became more cold-hearted, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, but I had the family, so I just came out to Cali. I was like, man, I just can't. I mean, they put me, I was like, basically my thing was, man, they take me off the roster every time I'm like, all right, I'm not even on the roster anymore, so why should I be here? But that's petty. That's super petty. So that's where my mind was, though. So that's a bad place to be.
Well, I know that there are some people who believe that the hurt guy is a ghost anyway, that people don't want to see the guy that's hurt because of everything that they have to do. And I remember like being in Miami, like it hurt me to see you, like honestly, yeah. Like it hurt me to see you because I know how badly you wanted to play in that game.
You had empathy. You were born with those two more. Yeah.
What was that Lawrence, experience like?
Dude, it was tough, Lawrence. Like those, it's hard for me to even still talk about it. Like I try to move on, but I know it's part of my history. It was terrible. I was a mess, bruh. I was a mess. Like, it's taken me a long time. A long time to get over that. I'm sorry, Lawrence. It's hard for me, dude. I want it back so bad, Lawrence, but it can't happen. So I'm back. It's sunny out here, but yeah, it's tough, Lawrence, but that's in the past, bro. But I still remember it though.
I think that's why you hold a very special place for Bears fans, is because they know what you went through. Like everyone knows your story, and here you have this triumphant moment in Arizona and it's like, fuck, like Mike's hurt. Like they win the game, but Mike's hurt. And then as they make it to Miami and you guys are getting ready for the biggest moment of your life, like seeing you at the stadium, I was just sitting there going, this guy deserves to be here. Like this guy deserves to be with his brothers on the field.
I was there. I got a couple back pedals in right there on the 50. Got me some back pedals in. You know what I'm saying? I was right there. Got the back pedals in. Called out Devin Hester taking the first thing back. Like, man, he's had the greatest rookie season ever of all time. He finna take this one back. Click up. Took it back. So I was there, brother.
So
we had a good time.
Can I tell you a funny story about that experience? Yeah. So, okay, so me and Zach obviously cover him, you guys, right?
Right.
So the station sends us down to Miami, and they said, okay, since Zach's on the sidelines, Zach gets the Bears. Lawrence, you go cover the Colts. I was like, okay.
Oh.
I was like, no big deal. So the Colts were all the way up in Fort Lauderdale. So we
you was all the way over there.
Yeah. So I was embedded with the Colts. And I remember talking with Tony Dungy specifically about Devin Hester. Because we would have these coaches' conference calls like every week with the other coach. And one of the first questions that we would always ask them is, what are they going to do about Devin? Are they going to kick to him? Are they going to kick out of bounds? Like, are they going to what are they going to do? And so most of the coaches would be like, it's the thing that we're thinking about the most. And we have a plan. We don't know if the plan's going to work, but it's our plan.
It's going to work.
So Dungy is telling us, oh, no. We're not going to allow him to have an impact on the game. And we know how good he is and the blah, 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 blah. So I was like, okay, I mean, that's probably your best strategy is to not kick Devin Hester the ball. But
I wouldn't kick it to him.
I wouldn't either. but then I guess he had read something. He told the story on Dan Patrick and I was dying laughing because he said that I was like, I'm not going to be fearful. I'm not going to be fearful.
Yeah, read the Bible.
And then he kicked it. And I was like, the whole time, like, I'm sitting there going, I can't. I've been talking to this dude for 7 days. And every day when he's asked about this, he's like, not kicking to Devin Hester. This is part of our plan. And as I see the ball in the air, I was like, I can't believe this shit. Like, he kicked off to this dude.
He kicked it to him.
In his hometown.
But check this out. See, that's the type of stuff coaches do, right? They're like, hey, I'm not going to do this. And then they're like, hey, you know what? I don't care. We're going to go down there. We're going to kick it to him, and we're going to tackle him. That's what coach is like, man, all week we've been saying we ain't going to kick it to him. You know what I'm saying? Now all of a sudden we're going to kick it to him? No.
Oh, man. It was a lot of fun. Were you able to see Prince at all?
Man, bro. Hey, I was out there, man, in the rain. Singing Purple Rain in the rain? Come on, bro.
You can't beat that.
Iconic.
So I got the chance to see him on Friday.
You did? He had a concert before?
Okay, so here's how it went down. So by this point, between being there for, at that point, 7 days, Miami, like, just being on South Beach.
Man, yeah, Miami would take it all out of you.
Yep, and all the work that me and Zach did, like, we were completely done. By Friday, like, we were slap happy silly at that point.
Dumb.
So they had back then, they had like the dry erase board, and they tell you who was coming to the convention center. So that was Lovey and Dungy would come to the convention center on Friday. They would do their last like official press conference. It was over at like 9 o'clock, and we were like, cool, we got the whole day to recover, to kick it, like all of this stuff. Then I see them. Yeah, we finally get a break before they play the big game. So
then
someone puts on the board Prince press conference, 1:30. And I said,
I'm coming back.
Right. So I was like, there's no way he answers our questions. Like, there's no way that Prince is going to sit here looking at a bunch of sports dudes and answer questions about anything. So I'm in the back of the room, Mike. I'm in the back of the room. Prince is on stage. I'll send you the video of it because it's amazing.
Please, I gotta see it.
Prince is on stage and he walks up to the microphone. He goes, contrary to popular belief, I will take your questions. And I'm just sitting there stunned, right? So a dude in the back of the room like raises his hand and asks a question. Prince turns around, starts playing. The band,
guitar?
Yes. The whole band is all there set up and everything.
No.
So he plays. He plays for, I think, about 15 minutes. I'm sitting in the back of the room, like, with my mouth just open because I can't believe that I'm 200 feet from Prince. I'm 200 feet from the man.
That's what That's the man. They say Prince is dope. That's what he do, man. He just dope. He doesn't even know why he dope. He's just like, this is what I do, man. I'm Prince.
So he plays. The band plays. He's got the, that, I think that was the time he had twins on stage with him too.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they're jamming. We're all just sitting there like, are we watching a Prince concert? Like, we're watching a Prince concert. He finishes, like, they finish their jam session. It's 15 minutes in. He's like, see y'all at the Super Bowl, and walks off the fucking stage.
Love it.
I was sitting there like, what just happened? So I actually got to see Prince twice in 48 hours because y'all went to the Super Bowl.
Hey, I'm smiling for you, bro. That is a great story.
Dude, it was.
That's the man.
Like, yeah. It was so, like, I tried to explain it to Charles. He's like, what do you mean Prince had a concert before the Super Bowl? And I was like, you're not going to believe this shit. Like,
he couldn't feel it.
And there were 200 there were 200 people in the room. 200 people.
A private concert.
With Prince.
Amazing.
You can't beat that with a stick, man. You can't beat it with a stick.
That's pretty cool. Like, that's top notch right there, L Dog. Like, man.
200 people just, and there's Prince, and there he goes. And they, they had told us, like, they had, cause in the convention center, they were like, if you need to go to the bathroom, you got to go to the, like, second floor, because Prince has got all the bathrooms on the first floor of the convention center on lock. You can't go nowhere near him. Don't say nothing. If you see him, don't look at him directly.
Don't even look at me. Remember Jamie Foxx said, you didn't look him in his eyes, did you?
Exactly.
Remember that stand-up?
Exactly. And then he came in there and did work, and we were like, holy shit. Like, that was, it made it all worthwhile. It was like, Mike, you have no idea, man. That day was so crazy. Like, I'm pretty sure Amanda Beard, the Olympic swimmer, asked Zach out on a date. Like, also,
man,
it was
really?
It was, dude, I'll get you the audio. It was amazing. Like, we were sitting there like, oh, Zach, a little pimp. All right, see you.
Hey, Lawrence, how much have you seen? Way more than I've seen, probably, huh?
Of Zach?
No, of like all that Prince or just random stuff.
Yeah,
like
stuff. Random. The stuff that surrounds you guys, I always
random.
Thought was amazing. Like,
it's random, huh? It's weird.
I remember you guys were playing in Tampa, and the lobby at the Grand Hyatt in Tampa, like, y'all was balling that year, and people was just coming out of the woodwork, fam.
It was packed. But, you know, it's Florida, so, you know, a lot of players, you know, people was from Florida.
Or, like, the Renaissance Center in Detroit. Like, you see people see? They just roll up, man. It was
it's deep.
It
and
is.
Like, that's what I'm saying. We don't see that. So, we're sequestered, so we don't see the craziness like that. Like, that's what I'm saying. I know you probably seen some wild stuff, bro.
Well, that weekend was really, obviously, like, it's a Super Bowl. Like, I saw TJ, I ran into Thomas on South Beach, like, that the Saturday before the Super Bowl, and I was like, TJ.
No, wait, what's his name on the show, though? P Valley, what's his name?
Maine.
Hey, go get it, T. Joe. That's my man right there, though. He's tired.
He good family, man. He's a good dude. I'm so happy to see. Isn't that amazing? Like, I joked with him. I had him on the show, and I said, have you read your Wikipedia page? And he's like, what are you talking about? I was like, your Wikipedia page starts with Thomas Jones is an American actor.
Oh, that's dope, though.
Like, this is a dude that ran for 10,000 in the league.
Man, put in that work, bro. Man, like, you since high school. Since high school.
And his Wikipedia say he an actor.
What pick was it? The sixth pick of the draft?
Yep.
The sixth pick. Yeah, come on. What you mean? Thomas Jones is putting in that work forever.
I'm so happy that he's having this opportunity to do great stuff. And, like, he was great on Luke Cage. And he's just been killing it.
I agree. He's like, a legit dude. He's right up the street, man. I don't try to get into people's business or whatever, but I'm gonna try to get in touch with him and see what's up, man. I've been wanting to do that, so you gave me permission too.
Good, y'all should do your own podcast, because that would be hilarious.
No, I just want to like, he was cool. Like, I remember when he went for a G-man up there in Minnesota, man. He was, like, the first one of the Chicago Bears to go for a G-man in a minute. And it's just, like, he was just good people, man. Like, he's a true pro. Like, you appreciate people that come in and do their work, and they do it respectfully. They do it like gentlemen, and they're respectful for everyone that's in the locker room, and he's one of those guys.
I think that him and Olin were two offensive dudes that had a defensive mentality.
Oh, yeah. Like, Olin is a football dude. It doesn't matter. He's just football, all football. To me, like, I mean, Olin, to me, would be my first pick in any football draft I would have. That's how much I respect him as a football player. And not only as a football player, but as a leader. And he's strong. He's the alpha dog. If you got to understand, he's the alpha dog. But his realness, his heart, like, his true love is evident, at least to me. So he would be my first pick because his knowledge of the game and how he goes about it is, to me, unmatched.
Now that you've been away from the game for a while, is there anything that you miss that can't be replaced?
Yeah, you can't hit people going. You can't hit nobody no more, bro. You can't even do nothing. Like, it's hard to watch. Like, of course. And then you got the, like, people like, oh, you just got dogs. Like, man, what am I supposed to do? Like, man, like, no, I can't even hit the dude, bro. I can't even tackle him. Can't touch him. Like, get out of here, man.
Who are players that you like right now?
Man. Dude, oh, you know, give me Eddie J all day. I wish I had his skill. You know, I guess that's what it is. I'm envious of Eddie. I guess that's what I would say. I wish I had his like, he's super skillful. So I wish I had his skill. Give me, you know, oh man. They're big though. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, the game is so different now, though. It's hard for me. It's going to be Adams, but he just got traded. And then it's going to be, what's my man's name for San Diego? James?
Derwin James.
Yeah, he's a monster. Like, he's a freaking monster. And then Adams, he's with Seattle now, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he's like, they get down. But they can do way, I mean, they do a lot, bro. I think that's what I see. You know who I like, though? But I don't know if they call him a safety. He's the Badger, man. T-Mac, bro. He's a beast.
Honey Badger.
Yeah, he's a beast. But I don't know. Do they call him a safety? What do they call him?
He's still a hybrid because they're in some situations he's a corner and some he's a safety. Right. Sometimes he's down in the box. Like, he does a little bit of everything.
See, that's like, those type of dudes remind me of Peanut. Peanut could have been like that, bro. I've been all over the place, bro. Like, do everything. Linebacker, corner, safety, whatever. Defensive lineman, whatever you want to do. Go ahead.
I hope that he gets into the Hall of Fame. And
he should be.
I agree with you. Why do you think he should be in the Hall?
Just look at his stats. If you just go off of stats, definitely should be on the Hall of Fame. But also, like, I think the one thing that I would say is that he has definitely changed the dynamic of the game with just what we call the peanut punch. So right there, if you are able to change the way the game is played, and that's on your name, and you got stats to back it up, Hall of Fame to me.
I think that there were a lot of people who didn't appreciate the fact that this was a corner that was taking the ball away. And it didn't get – it's weird because I feel like Charles didn't get appreciated for everything he did until maybe 10 years into the league. Because people didn't get it. Like, he was taking the ball away the way that you would ask any defender to take the ball away. He's taking it at an incredible pace.
More.
Right.
More. Like, way more than anything. Like – But look, hey, who was in the middle? You got Brian Urlacher. You got Lance Briggs. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, that's what I'm saying. We have players, Lawrence. So people see what they want to see. But the players, the best thing, like, you know how I am, Lawrence. Like, as long as the teammates that I know that that I respect them and I love them and we have the same, like, that's all that I care about. I care if they think I could play football or anything like that. But as long as they know I was putting in work, we straight. And the Peanut's the same way. But Peanut deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I think it's a no-doubter in my mind. I think, like I told you, the stats speak for themselves. And then, like, he changed the way people do things now. Like, he really did. It's him. Like, how to get the ball out. He changed how that's done now. That is crazy. That's amazing. And he used to do it all the time. And I will tell you, it is not easy. We used to try to do it, and it takes a special skill to do it. So
it is funny to me that when now you see players do it, like, it's his name. Like,
it's him. It's the Peanut Punch. That's what I'm saying.
Like, that's dope. That's a dope legacy to have. You know what I mean?
Of course it is. Yes. Yes. That's him. Yes. Forever. The Peanut Punch. Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? It's got to be in the Hall of Fame.
So for now, are you just happy being umpire, dad, soon to be driving instructor? Because that's going to be a thing now,
yeah,
with your daughter.
So
all these things, like, do you feel like fulfilled, or is there more stuff that you want to do?
No, you know what? That's the thing. That's the thing. I'm super grateful, man. I'm super grateful. I've become more faithful in, like, what I believe in and those type of things, and that's helped me tremendously. So, yeah, man, like, I'm super grateful the place that I'm at. I'm super grateful that I get opportunities to do things. And so that's the mindset that I take into every day now. So, yeah, I'm super happy, super grateful. I'm super blessed. Like, I would say an easy life, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's very simple. But yeah, I'm Lawrence. I get to talk to you, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm good, baby. So I appreciate you. That's all I can say.
I appreciate you doing this, Mike. I know that a lot of this stuff is not easy for you to revisit. But I'll tell you that part of the reason that I first of all, I mean, you knew from the time that you were a player, like, I love talking to you anyway, but
yeah, we just kicked it. Yeah.
But I think that for a lot of Bears fans, like, you're the guy, like, you're the guy that a lot of 30 jerseys got sold. You know what I'm saying? Like
I'm the regular dude, man. I think I'm just the regular dude,
but they feel you. And I think that they always felt you. Like, everyone can see that Brian Urlacher is a superhero. You know what I'm saying?
He is, though.
But not all of us can be superheroes.
Exactly. That's why I love sports.
but if you work hard enough, you can maybe be Mike Brown. If you work hard enough.
You can grab on capes. You can grab on capes, homeboy. You got to work hard to catch them, though.
No, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you always having my back, too.
Lawrence, you know how I feel about you. All love, brother. And, you know, shout out to the Shy, baby.
They miss you, dude. They miss you.
All right,
sure.
Brother.
All right,
God
man.
Bless.
Be well.
All right, man. Peace.
That was so fun, man. It was fun to just talk with him about all of this stuff, like everything that he's gone through. And that story about his wife showing up in the locker room. Wow. Like, that's hilarious. That is hilarious stuff from Mike Brown. Very, you can tell why his teammates talked about him being a great teammate. He's one of those guys that kept things loose, but also had a point of view and was respected by the guys that he played with. And I know that he's still living, like, trying to work through missing out on playing in the Super Bowl. And I mean, I don't mean to throw shade, but one does wonder
if that touchdown pass to Reggie Wayne happens if Mike Brown is on the field. We all wonder it, right? But he's great. Like, he's great. And I like, it's fun for me to see all of these guys, like, to see them all grown up now, and now they're all in on their kids. They're all in on it. And Mike Brown, the baseball umpire, is hysterical to me. Hysterical. But I'm glad that he's doing well and he seems comfortable in his own skin, which is the most important thing that one can be. So I thank him. I thank him very much for being on the podcast. By the way, the podcast is brought to you by 56David.com. If you are refinancing or trying to finance a home, you should call him, 855-56-DAVID. Great thing about David is he will walk you through the process. If you're trying to buy a home or you're trying to refinance it, he will walk you through the process and then he will run through walls for you. Whatever it is you need, he's got you taken care of. Go to his website if you don't believe me, 56David.com. Look for yourself. He's worked on both of my homes. Like, I have my condo in Kenwood. He was there when I was like, I need like a house. He helped me with that too. 855-56-DAVID is where you can find him. I highly recommend that you talk to him if you're in a position to buy a home. Homeside Financial is an equal housing lender. NMLS number 1124061. We're also brought to you by Mazda of Orland Park. ZoomZoomNation.com. They're good people, and they care a lot about sports stuff. So when I do the sports pods, I want you to understand that Mazda of Orland Park, like, they're huge into my LoHo recaps on the White Sox games. Like, they love sports. And the fact that they love sports advertising is even better. ZoomZoomNation.com. I'm trying to think if there are other pieces to that puzzle of people that I want to talk to, like, from that era of the Bears. I mean, I haven't had Olin on House of L yet. And talking with him, like, getting him one-on-one and talking football with him would be dope. Because in the group setting, it's amazing to sit and listen to him talk about football. So if I got him one-on-one and we could really, because he always says we don't have time to dive into the X's and O's, but on this podcast, we could totally dive into the X and O's. And I like what Olin's doing with his life, and that the idea of trying to help people do something with that aggression, the fact that he's out training people, I think is great. He's also hysterical. Like, laugh out loud funny, and he's sharp. Like, he gets in these zingers. I wonder what it would be like to be his teammate. Because he's relentless. If he gets you on something, he's not going to let it go. But I've enjoyed working with him. I actually really miss that. I'll miss working with those guys because of the education that I got in watching football. But also, we just had fun. Like, you're in a room with Lance Briggs, Alex Brown, Matt Forte, and Olin Krutz while watching football. It's better than going to grad school. Better than getting a master's degree in football. Working with those dudes. But I'm glad I got a chance to talk with Mike. Because Mike was one of those dudes, like, we had a good enough relationship when I was covering the team that occasionally he would tell me stuff, like, during practice. And I mean, like, training camp practices where he'd be like, "Do you see that shit? Like, can you believe that?" I think that he was always amazed at some of the stuff that his other teammates, like especially Urlacher, did. And that Arizona game, man, that's something that Bears fans won't forget, nor should they. Because there's no way they should have won that game. No way in hell. they should have won that game. And I mean, Dennis Green said it the best. He didn't think they should have won that game either, but they did.
Four picks against Grossman and two fumbles. What did you see about the Bears? We shut them down that way?
No, the Bears are what we thought they were. They're what we thought they were. We played them in preseason. Who the hell takes a third game in a preseason like it's bull? We played them in the third game. Everybody played three quarters. The Bears are who we thought they were. And that's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Thanks, Coach. Matt Leinart will be one of the first in this room, probably about 5 minutes away.
So I love that at the end, that the PR guy is like, oh, Matt Leinart is coming up next. So I was told a story, not by Mike Brown. I was told a story of inside the locker room during that. They saw Dennis Green and they had the volume up. So as the Bears are celebrating this win, they see Dennis Green and someone yelled out, it may have been Olin Cruz. You tell him, Denny! So great. So great. But yeah, I'm happy that Mike had time. And I do think that if he feels comfortable going into coaching after his children grow up a little bit more, I think that he'd be great at it. He downplayed it, but I think we all know that that guy knows the game and could probably teach the game. But he's not wrong about the nonsense that happens with coaches where they're, oh my God, I've been sleeping here. Go home. Go home. You don't need to be here. Think about all these coaches that you see do this, and most of them lose. I'm sure Bill Belichick, like, spends hours and hours at facilities, but also, it seems like he still has a good time. I don't know. I think the whole thing's pretty crazy. I thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. Shout out to number 30, Mike Brown, for being on the podcast. We got more cool stuff coming up. Make sure you go back and check out some of the previous episodes of House of L. Like, I actually did have Lance Briggs on and had Alex Brown on. I got to get Forte. I got to get him on a one-on-one. So I'm Olin and Forte. I don't know if Lack will sit down with me. Maybe. We'll see. But I appreciate your support of this podcast. Please subscribe. Write a review, give us 5 stars, all that good stuff. Subscribe, unsubscribe, play the game. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next time. Peace.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.